Do you know what big data can do for your entrepreneurial business or your innovation team? Do you know what it can't do? And most importantly, do you know what is a much better source of knowledge and actionable insights? Per Byland explains your options.
This is the Economics for Entrepreneurs podcast, a project of the Mises Institute, applying the principles of economics to start, grow, and manage your business. For free tools, resources, key takeaways, and actionable insights from each episode, visit Mises.org/E4EPod. Now, here's Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. We are living in the era of big data. That's the term that's given to the combination of one, huge data sets made newly available with the arrival of the digital age, and two, the computerized and algorithmic analytics capable of mining the data sets for patterns that would be beyond human scale calculation. It is said that new insights can emerge from this new combination. And those new insights are economic. They make our world more efficient and more productive. Another word that's thrown around a lot is predictive, as in predictive modeling, the ability to forecast the future by extrapolating the patterns of the past. Data is now a factor of production, like land and labor and capital. Economic activity simply cannot take place without it. This is relevant for entrepreneurs. There are two kinds of economists: those who believe that it is possible to build enormous, complex mathematical models of economic behavior and activity and derive from those models both policy recommendations and predictions of the future. The second kind are those who disagree. Those are Austrians. Why? Because economics is about human beings and their subjective, emotional, idiosyncratic, constantly changing decision-making. All these idiosyncratic humans interacting with others, with markets, and with services and products are perfectly unpredictable. That's why Austrian economics says that the future is uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen. The economy is not mechanistic, it's human. Entrepreneurs are people who wade confidently into that uncertain human future. If the future can't be predicted, it can be imagined. Entrepreneurs are the ones who do the imagining. That's an act of creativity. They may have some data at their disposal about buying trends, for example, or about the time it takes a certain task to be done, or the click-through rates on certain digital ads. But they're still imagining the future. They imagine that they can get consumers to buy an alternative, or they can write some software to increase the speed of task completion, or they can get more clicks on a better ad. Those are all acts of imagination, not prediction and not data extrapolation. And subsequently, the entrepreneur must implement what they imagine. How do they do that? It's a matter of execution, not prediction. Every entrepreneur's business plan, at least if it's made for external viewing, has predictions of market size and revenue growth and market share achieved and margin and profit. But every entrepreneur also knows from cold, hard experience that such plans are often wishful thinking and require adjustment the second they come in contact with market reality. Today, we want to contrast the usefulness to the entrepreneur of big data versus big ideas. We're going to define big ideas as not just the original concept the entrepreneur utilizes as a vehicle to imagine the future. We're also going to include the ideas in the implementation phase of getting the execution of the business plan right, since entrepreneurial success is a combination of ideas and implementation. With us today is our good friend, Dr. Per Byland. As many of you know by now, Per is a fellow of the Mises Institute, assistant professor of entrepreneurship, and Records Johnson professor of free enterprise in the School of Entrepreneurship in the Speer School of Business at Oklahoma State University, and an associate fellow of the Ratio Institute in Stockholm. He's our authority on economics as a science of subjectivity and human values. Per, hello.
Hi, Hunter. Good to be with you again.
Thank you so much for being here.
We're going to talk today, or at least start today, with reference to an article that you wrote. It was on Mises.org, and it started with a big no. It said, no, big data can't predict the future. So today we're going to talk about big data. We're going to talk about the limitations of big data and predictive analytics for our entrepreneur listeners. But also, after that, we'll get to a place where hopefully we can help entrepreneurs understand what big data can do for them, and then also what they can do that big data can't. So that's our goal today. Let's start, Per, with your headline idea. Predictive analytics can't actually predict.
Yes, that sounds pretty provocative, doesn't it? I mean, what I meant by that was simply that the future is uncertain, and uncertainty means that it cannot be predicted in detail, so you cannot know exactly. And I think as an economist, I'm sort of suffering from that. It's an old sociological joke that ask an economist anything and you will get a prediction that is very exact and precise and definitely wrong. So, and in a sense, that's correct. What I wrote in that article was simply, it was based off of the then new Bing search engine's prediction engine. So they tried to predict sports results using big data. So they collected all the data you can imagine from different sports teams. And then they, through machine learning and artificial intelligence and so forth, they ran algorithms on that, on those data, and they tried to predict who would be the winner. Obviously, this is so much easier than starting a business or doing something in the real world, because the teams, you have a lot of statistics on all the players, on the teams' historic plays, if they're in good shape right now, and what the trend is, and so forth. And they're playing according to very specific rules. And you also know that, well, one team will be the winner. Nothing else can happen. It's not uncertain in the sense that, oh, maybe a third team will show up and win the game. That doesn't happen. So it's sort of a very restricted problem to solve. And even so, this prediction engine using the AI and all this data could only predict the right winner in approximately two-thirds of the time. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of interesting, because in the real world, what does that mean? If you have sort of open-ended results, that means big data should have a lesser frequency of right predictions, making it basically a toss-up. I mean, anything less than two-thirds, I mean, you should expect it to be at least 50%, because that's just random. But then if you have some insight, two-thirds is not a whole lot better.
Well, you were referring in the article to an over-reliance, you said, on the law of large numbers, that not everything reverts to the mean, and pattern analysis is not the same as prediction. So just go a little bit deeper into the mathematics of it.
Sure. I mean, we would like to think that the world is very rules-based and with explicit rules that we can understand, and that so that we can follow and plan. I mean, there's this whole sort of romantic view that wouldn't it be better to rationally plan society instead of having all these people trying stuff out, and some of them are trying very silly things. Wouldn't it be better if we could just collect all the data and then make a rational decision? But the problem is, of course, that the world doesn't work like that. And many of the thinkers that we've referred to previously on this show have talked about how we're talking about the social world. We're talking about social phenomena that are sort of emergent from individuals' actions. And it really depends on how people act and what comes out of their actions. And how they act depends on how they see the world and what they feel like pursuing. And you can't really know that, which means the outcome of all those billions of people and what they choose to do, you cannot use data to predict exactly what's going to come out of that. So what you can do is just figure out sort of formalistic rules that apply universally, but generally, but not in specific cases, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you called it a romantic way of looking at the world, but actually it's a mechanistic way of looking at the world, that you can turn a certain dial and you can get a certain result. The Federal Reserve can lower interest rates and you'll get a stimulated economy, but you don't believe that mechanistic view is valid.
Exactly. So, everything affects everything in a sense. And what we would say in economics is that the economy is endogenous. So all variables are dependent on all the other variables to some extent, which means that if you tinker with one of the variables and at one end of the economy, that's going to have effects on all the other variables as well, but probably not at the same time. And it depends on which variable is affected first. And the Fed example is a good one because, sure, lowering interest rates, that's going to have some effect on investment and so forth, but you don't know investment in what. And what will those investments lead to? I mean, we saw that when most of those investments went into construction of houses. It could also have been construction of something else or development of services or whatnot, but it happened to be houses. And that in turn led to investments in certain materials used for housing, and it increased wages for construction workers, but not workers elsewhere in the economy and so forth. And that in turn had repercussions for other industries that were sort of adjacent to construction, meaning that whoever was affected last is going to see the effects last as well. But it will eventually disseminate throughout the economy, but you can't really predict in what order or with what magnitude for a specific industry, for a specific business, or for a specific person.
Right. So that gets us to the relevance here of our discussion for Austrian entrepreneurs, talking about them as individuals and their customers as individuals. So the core concept that's at the heart of this analysis is that human behavior is unpredictable. And we talk about humans being subjective in the nature of their preferences, and therefore their choices can't be predicted. And yet the value creation task of the entrepreneur is to try and get to the point where the consumer makes the choice in their favor. So let's take your analysis down to the individual entrepreneur. Does that same case apply to him or her, that the future is unpredictable, human behavior is unpredictable?
Yes, absolutely. It is. I mean, you can possibly say that some behavior is predictable in the sense that you know sort of in what area it will take place, but you don't know exactly the outcome. And I think that is a problem when talking about prediction, that what we mean by prediction is getting the exact result. We already know that if you, for instance, raise prices very fast or by large magnitudes, then you will sell fewer goods. So that's always going to be true, but you don't know how many fewer. So that type of detailed specific prediction is simply impossible. In terms of the individual entrepreneur and frankly, the individual consumer, what we're really talking about is with human behavior is, I mean, to use a shortcut, it's free will, right? So if we believe that people have free will, and even if we don't, then you can't really say exactly what's going to be the outcome. It's not a matter of simple causality that if we increase the temperature by 1 degree Fahrenheit, then it will have these effects, because people will choose differently and they will see that temperature increase differently as well, depending on their situation and what they consider to be important and so forth. For the entrepreneur, of course, it's a matter of valuation. They need to produce something that consumers consider valuable, and they need to produce something now that consumers in a future time period consider valuable, which makes it very difficult, because even if consumers right now can tell you that they really, really value what you are planning to produce, it doesn't mean that they will value it when you are done producing it. So they might still change their minds. And since we're talking about individuals with their free will, or even if you have a sort of deterministic view of people, it's so complex how we make decisions and all those things that influence us that you still cannot predict. I mean, maybe a god could predict, but that would be the only entity that could predict perfectly how people act. And as far as I know, there are no gods playing entrepreneurs.
Not that we know of. But you did say in your article that there was a service that big data could provide, in that it can exclude, perhaps, the least likely future events. It can tell you if things are very unlikely. So I think you talked about the, you know, the Amazon prediction that if you like this, you might like one of these 10 things, which it puts in front of you. And it's at least excluded the least likely things. Is that narrowing of options, is that something that big data can help with?
Absolutely. I think that is where data can actually make a difference to figuring out what might not be the case. So in a sense, avoiding mistakes, avoiding errors. And of course, as an entrepreneur, it's really difficult, first of all, to figure out what other people might want. And many, I think, make the mistake of simply applying their own preferences on other people, saying that, well, I like this product, that's why I'm producing it to begin with. And since I like it, other people should like it too. But that might not be the case, and they might not see it the same way as you do. Maybe you are having sort of a very idiosyncratic preference for that type of product. Maybe you have specific interests that other people don't, and so forth. So using data to narrow it down and figure out what are, in general, the patterns, and what are sort of the clusters of people, what are their preferences, what do they tend to like, and things like that. And I think, judging from my own experience on Amazon.com, I mean, what they say is simply that people who bought this product also bought this other product. That doesn't mean that there's a relationship between those two products necessarily. I mean, you can think of when you go to Walmart to go shopping, what is in your shopping cart? Well, there might not be a specific relationship between those goods in there. Maybe you buy a plant and you buy toothpaste and you buy ground beef. What is the relationship between those three? Well, the relationship is simply that you wanted those three at that moment. But it could be the case, using more customers' behavior, that maybe they're cooking a specific meal so that they need the ground beef and specific spices and whatnot else. And if you look at a couple of those, you can sort of infer that maybe you're cooking that type of meal, and then you would also be interested in this sort of thing. Or maybe you are on a specific diet, so that you do not want to eat pasta or whatever is not in your diet. So you can use those tools, but those are very blunt tools. You cannot say that, oh, you will want this. You can say that this might be something you want to look into as well, because other people have liked it.
Right. I remember some analysis of supermarket shopping that said that if a consumer buys beef, for example, then the likelihood of them buying on the same trip a list of other items, like a vegetable or maybe red wine or something like that, can be, the likelihood goes up. It's not predictive, but it tells the supermarket operator, hey, if you offer some incentives on those items, the beef shopper might buy them. So I could see that, I think it's called comparative filtration or something like that. If you buy X, you might also buy Y. And that's not predictive, but it's correlative, perhaps.
Right, and it helps you avoid mistakes, and it helps you potentially identify trends as well. I mean, when customers start buying a whole lot of very fatty products and stay away from carbohydrate-rich products, maybe it is because of this recent trend, for instance, in pursuing ketogenic diets. So
right.
maybe you should increase your stock of, I don't know, bacon and oils and stuff like that, and maybe cut down a little bit on the shelf space offered for pastas. So you can use it that way, but it doesn't mean, of course, that this particular customer who has ground beef in their shopping cart will also pick this up, because you can't say that.
Right. It's not individually applicable. So we've got something here. The big data and those kinds of analytics can help us avoid big mistakes, can maybe narrow a range of possibilities for us. But let's go earlier in the entrepreneurial cycle, where you've told us that the entrepreneur needs to identify dissatisfactions among the customer base and use those dissatisfactions to create an offering that might solve them. Maybe big data can help identify dissatisfactions, so you can analyze Yelp reviews and find out what people are unhappy about, or Facebook posts. There are sentiment analysis kinds of tools now that can do that and apply some pattern recognition to the words and the expressions. Do you think that's useful to entrepreneurs to identify patterns that reveal dissatisfactions?
Yes, I think so. I mean, as long as it's not relied on sort of verbatim, because they give indications to behavioral in general and so forth. But all of this, I mean, remember, data are always historic. So they're always something that has already happened. Whereas mm-hmm. what you're aiming for as an entrepreneur is always the future. And something can always affect people's behavior in the future, such as a disruptive innovation and things like that, usually changes people's behavior quite drastically and could completely undermine your value proposition. The relationship between historic data and the future is simply some sort of inertia or path dependence in how people behave. So some things are obvious, like we mentioned the Yelp reviews, that offering bad service and treating your customers badly, that's usually not a good way of making a profit and attracting more customers. So you can learn from that. Maybe you can learn from the sort of comparative level of service offered, or maybe the price level of your restaurant compared to the service level offered or something like that. But I would still warn against using it more as something more than simply a guide.
Right. So in our an earlier edition this year, July 30th, Dr. Smita Bakshi talked about combining qualitative data and quantitative data to come to that kind of guided position. So she had invented a very effective ed tech product for teaching computer science. And the two inputs were, the first was big data. 50% of computer science students don't complete their first year course because it's too hard. It's a struggle for them. And then the subjective creative analysis was just talking to instructors about why, what do you observe in the class? What kinds of things do the students tell you about their struggles? And that was an empathic diagnosis. Why is it so hard for them? And she said it was the combination of data and analytics and empathic understanding that got her to the design of the solution. So is that the kind of approach that you could favor, big data analytics plus human emotional insight?
Yes, absolutely. I love that. How the data can give you an indication of sort of a problem area where you can solve a problem and potentially limit and delineate where the major problem is at. And then, of course, you still need to listen in to people and try to figure out what it is they actually want. And we talked about this before, how consumers not very often know exactly what they want. They have some sort of dissatisfaction and something that they want to, some want that they need to satisfy, but they're not quite sure how, and they might not even see the value until you offer it to them and explain to them how. But I think in terms of, I mean, this is an excellent example, I think, using data and empathic diagnosis. I think the only thing here is that you can sometimes, as an entrepreneur, skip the data part. It's still possible, but I don't think you can skip the empathic diagnosis. So you still need to listen in to people. And we talked about this before, right? That entrepreneurship is about knowing two things, knowing people and understanding people, and knowing economics or understanding the market and how that works. And both are really people in a sense, but they're about what you can satisfy with consumers and what consumers might be looking for. That's the know people part, and where the economy or where the market overall, your competitors and so forth, might be heading, and that's the economy part. And if you can position yourself and what you're offering with respect to both, then you're in very good shape. And part of the positioning can be done through data analysis and sort of this type of data prediction or data-based prediction, but it's not exact. It can give you sort of a direction or an indication, but you still need to make your own personal judgment of what you think is more likely and where things might be heading and what would actually speak to consumers.
Excuse me for 1 second, Per. We're talking about how to get to a value proposition that works for businesses. And we've covered understanding people, analyzing the market, and creating and communicating the best positioning. These capabilities and many more are covered in our Austrian Entrepreneur's Journey course, where you can learn a step-by-step approach and find templates and tools you can put to work. You can find the Austrian Entrepreneur's Journey course at e4epod.com/journey. That's the letter E, the number 4, letter E, pod.com/journey. And now back to our conversation.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of value propositions like that that big data couldn't have invented. And one of the ones I thought about was Airbnb, which, if I understand the story of Airbnb from its origins, they were renting literally airbeds on the floor of an apartment in San Francisco for programmers to attend one of the big tech shows there. So the value proposition of Airbnb would be impecunious nerds attending fashionable tech conferences will pay to sleep on an air mattress on the floor of your apartment. I can't imagine that big data could have come up with that. But they did test the proposition. They put ads on Craigslist and people respond to it. So I guess there was some data to it. But you say maybe you can skip the data part entirely, but you can't skip the empathic part.
Yes, depending on what it is you're doing as an entrepreneur. I mean, you can still, I think you shouldn't stay away from data. If there are data available that can potentially help you and maybe give you insight into a certain geographic area or a market segment or something like that, you should definitely use data because it can help you. But you should still make sure to interpret the data and the results yourself and use your best judgment to do so. And Airbnb is a great example where you couldn't see this. You could potentially see that people wanted to travel and thought hotels were too expensive, but that doesn't offer you the solution. That offers only the problem. I mean, another favorite example of entrepreneurship educators like myself would be the Petrock, if you remember from the 80s, the guy who sold a rock simply in a box. And it's this wonderful pet because you don't have to care for it at all. And how could big data possibly have understood that people wanted a rock in a box and call it a pet and find that valuable? Maybe some people thought it was simply funny, and others simply thought that was a great way of having a pet that did not require a lot of attention and care and so forth. But the fact is that since people bought it, there was value in it for people. And there was obviously a lot of value for a lot of people because it sold quite well, if I recall. I mean, big data cannot ever figure these things out.
Right. And That's a great example. And another one where I was trying to think through this challenge is Netflix, which is a huge user of big data, and they use it, among other things, to put in front of you the kinds of video programs they predict you will be interested in based on your previous watching and maybe some other data that they have. But even they are spending billions and billions of dollars on the creative side. They're hiring big directors and big actors and using creative leaps that they can't possibly know whether they'll be successful. Spending $100 million on making a movie is a very unpredictable activity. So even a big data dominant company like Netflix needs creativity to figure out what consumers will like.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think personally that Netflix does a very good job in sort of predicting what I want to see next. Because I think what is shown in the Netflix app is hardly ever interesting to me. But you can still say that in terms of the data, if I have watched a number of, say, thrillers, and I have graded them all with a thumb up, or however you do that on Netflix now, well, then obviously it seems like I'm probably more interested in another thriller than in a romantic comedy, perhaps. So you can show more thrillers for this customer. That's rather easy. And this very limited set of data too, right? That they already have a lot of movies and they want me to continue to watch the movies that they have, and they just present a selection. But that will never ever take you to the next big thing. And you can't really tell what will be the next thing and what people are sort of in the mood for. I remember the TV series Twin Peaks. I don't remember when that was. Was it in the 90s or something?
Yeah.
When it was broadcast. And it started with a very small budget because it was a crazy idea and no one thought that would ever become a thing. But it turned out to be a global hit. And of course, they got a lot of extra money and everything, and they replaced the directors and I don't know what. But these things are created through people's imagination, and they think that this would be cool. I mean, there's an artistic sort of creative aspect to it, but there's also the judgment that this is not only cool to be making for ourselves, but this is something that people might actually want to watch because of these qualities, or at least I think so, right? So those two aspects together and would create a new product that could be very valuable for consumers and thus give you a profit and could disrupt the market perhaps, but it could also be a complete flop, and big data cannot help you there.
Right, so let's characterize that in an inspiring way for Austrian entrepreneurs, that big data can't do big ideas. It can't even do small ideas. It can't do imagination. So that's a source of differentiation for entrepreneurs, big ideas that combine empathy and subjectivity and recognizing value and creativity in trying different things. So I like to get across the idea that the entrepreneurial firm acts differently from the big data-powered corporate operations because they think harder about the customer or the consumer. They study human motivation. They do that qualitatively rather than quantitatively. And they focus all their activity and resources and capital on facilitating value that way. So I want to be inspiring about that. And you've helped us do that. Can you build on that?
Well, absolutely. I think when you have an existing firm, you've sort of already laid the groundwork for whether there is value in the product or not. And I'm not saying that since people demanded your product yesterday, they're also going to demand it tomorrow, but you have already uncovered that there seems to be enough people interested in this sort of thing at a certain price that you can continue to sell to the market. So for an existing business, especially big corporations that produce sort of standard products or commodities even, it's really a matter of using big data to position themselves and make sure that they can find out whether they can increase the sales volume or enough by lowering the price, or if they should increase the price somewhat. And of course, companies do that today on Amazon, where they tweak the price every minute, basically. So it's about positioning with respect to the market that you have already identified. But for an entrepreneur starting a new business, it's really all about the imagination. It's all about figuring out, can I produce something that is of value to people? And how can I produce it? And how do I communicate this to people? How do I figure out if people might enjoy this, if people want it, and do they want it enough? And you can't really know that until you try, but you can, using your imagination and your best judgment, and you can study history and data and so forth to make sure that you don't make any sort of obvious mistakes, but you can't rely on the past to show you the future. You have to do that yourself. So, I mean, that's sort of the scary part of being an entrepreneur, but it's also what makes entrepreneurship glorious and how entrepreneurship is really a driving force of the market, because there's no limitation really to what entrepreneurs can do, because it's all in their heads. It's all their imagination. The only limitation, of course, is will people like this or not? And that's where you need to use your own best judgment.
You mentioned that big data maybe is more useful to the larger companies when they're in the growth mode and the implementation mode. Big data can be useful to entrepreneurs in that phase. For example, if you use the targeting tool in Facebook advertising, that's a big data tool. It's crunched enormous amounts of data and can help you select the targets and exclude the ones that are less likely, to use that theme that you've talked about before, as being productive to you. Or you can use Google's advertising, which has the same kind of big data back to it, and it at least eliminates waste in your entrepreneurial execution. So is that another place where big data at least can be helpful in narrowing options for entrepreneurs?
Yes, I would say so. And you can really use, in a sense, you use data in whatever way you imagine valuable and useful. So, but I would say that its primary function for the entrepreneur should be to avoid errors and narrow things down and potentially identify where your product has the greatest chance of succeeding in terms of market segment. So when we teach entrepreneurship, we teach that students should identify their beachhead market, where the people who most value your product are at, what type of person they are, what type of lives they're leading, all of these things. And you can narrow it down using those types of variables, like demographic variables and things like that. But that's not going to tell you who will actually value it, and it's not going to tell you how you need to communicate the product, but it will exclude people who you think, and maybe the data will tell you, are less likely to be interested in any type of product or service in this space.
Yep, good. So it's an efficiency tool in the execution phase and growth phase of an entrepreneurial firm. It helps you eliminate waste.
Exactly.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, let's sum up there, Per. I always attempt to do that, and I always find you do it better than I do, but we're saying that Austrian entrepreneurs shouldn't ignore the availability of big data. They can find ways to use it on their entrepreneurial journey, and we thought it was mostly in reducing uncertainty and not identifying insights, but pointing to dissatisfactions on the way to finding an insight. But an insight is always creative when you're thinking about consumer wants and needs. So empathy and emotional understanding, listening and responding to individual feedback, those are better data tools than big data and analytics for the entrepreneur. How did I do?
I think that was excellent. That's what we talked about. And I mean, it is really about narrowing it down. And I mean, in a sense, learning from history, not to repeat it. But we should also recognize that the future is different. And we're still about to create the future. And I think that's where the imagination comes in, that entrepreneurs are actually in the business of creating everybody's future.
Right. And only entrepreneurs can do that because of the nature of unpredictability means that their never before thought solutions can be right, they can be wrong, but that's going to create the future, as you say. Good. Well, thank you, Per. We have covered the field, I think. Hopefully it's useful for people. And thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Hunter.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. You can follow Hunter Hastings at HunterHastings.com.